Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live on 101.3 KPCG. Coming up on this Wednesday edition, turns out there's nothing like the great outdoors for exercise. A new study found that to be true. Also, California's travel ban, they have a travel ban, and they're messing with Texas. The UK's has a new aircraft carrier as well. Some say that it is a disaster, and an expensive one at that. That and more on this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live on Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG. We're online at kpcg.fm. We appreciate you joining us there. Live link at thetrumpet.com as well. Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon, and Abraham Blondeau back today. Everyone's back, and we're all together again, reunited, as it should be.
It's been 11 whole days since we've all three been in here at the same time.
I know.
It's hard to believe.
It's amazing. The ratings have never been higher, but
surprised weren't riots in the street.
Yeah. So. Well, there were, just over other issues, not related to us. I was telling you guys, before I came on the air, I had this sneezing fit. You know, you get those where you sneeze like 100 times in a row, give or take. Give or take 90. And so I'm dealing with that. I don't know why that happens. It's weird. I have to research that and find out why those things occur sometimes. You feel like you just can't stop sneezing for some reason.
I would just blame Oklahoma. Even on my way here, I was sick about a little over a week ago, runny nose and stuff. And this morning felt fine, no problems on driving to work. All the air getting in my face, and then I start having runny nose again, just because of all the
allergens.
Pollen. And,
yeah, there's a lot of allergens in this part of the country. In New York City, people were allergic to Phil Jackson. he's a GM for the, I think he was a GM for the Knicks. Of course, famous as a player for them years ago, but then also more famous as a coach for the Bulls and the Lakers. He won altogether, I think, 11 championships. So New York hired him, and they paid him a whole bunch of money. And apparently he's run the franchise into the ground, and now they're firing him. They have to give him $24 million, though. Those are the types of jobs that don't come along too often, where they want you to leave so bad, they're going to pay you $24 million. So, I mean, it's part of his contract. But they're going to get rid of him. Anyway, he gets $24 million for doing a poor job.
Well, he signed a smart contract in that case if he's still able to make all that money, even from not doing the job. I always thought the controversy around him was a bit overblown. I don't really know what exactly he did that was so egregious. It looked like he actually assembled a pretty good team. We were talking about that before as well. I mean, you have Derrick Rose, Joakim Noah, Carmelo Anthony, Kristaps Porzingis, all on the same team. It's not really his fault at that point if they don't produce on the court, but you would have thought, as the general manager, that would be a pretty decent team to put out there.
Yeah, I thought they made some okay deals. I don't know. It's hard to say. Stephen A. Smith, he's a real Knicks fan. And he just, his part of his shtick is to get really worked up about trivial matters. And I literally thought he was going to die. He was so angry about Phil Jackson. He always says things like, it's blasphemous, egregious, you know, all these maybe overblown words. But it'll be interesting to hear what he has to say. He'll be happy now that Phil's gone. He wanted him out of there bad.
Yeah, well, aren't the Knicks one the like famous old NBA teams?
Yeah, sure.
So it'd be good if they could be successful again, because a lot of the newer teams have success. Not all the time. Like, if the Celtics were good a few years ago and the Lakers were good, but be good to get these old teams back up.
It's good for the NBA.
Yeah.
If they can get the more historic franchises going. And people love New York in terms of the opportunities. I mean, if you play there, you can make more with advertising and things like that. Big market, of course. So anyway, we'll see what happens there with that. As far as the nation is concerned, the number one home price growth area is Seattle, the opposite coast. their houses have gone up the most. So either of you guys own a home in Seattle?
Not that I'm aware of.
Not that you're aware of? Maybe somebody left you one? The typical single-family house across the Seattle metro area cost 12.9% more in April than a year ago, according to a release of monthly home prices, the index. Portland was second at 9.3%. So people want to be out there on the West Coast in those areas. The last time local home values grew this quickly was October 2013, and the annual increase in prices is nearing a level they haven't seen since the bubble years before the recession. Nationally, home price increases are slowing down a bit, they say, 5.5%, which is still pretty solid. But it takes half of an income, typically, or usually two incomes, to get a starter home in Seattle. I always wonder about that when the prices get so high and you know people are selling, who's buying? You know, who's buying at the height of the inflated prices?
Those are some definitely some really gorgeous places to live up there around Seattle and Portland. But when you're paying that much and getting taxed that much, the only way to really deal with that is to have both the husband and the wife in the home working outside the home, or you have to make a lot of money yourself. You have to be borderline rich.
Yeah, and buy one of those homes. The fastest growing markets altogether, number one is Seattle, two is Portland, three is Dallas, our neighbor to the south. Four is Denver, and five is Detroit. Detroit? Is that a typo? Of course, the houses, you were buying houses for a dollar up there a while ago, so maybe now they're like...
Of course it would go up.
A buck 07. 7 cents extra, so I don't know. That's on the rise somewhat. The most expensive city in the United States to live, any guesses?
Los Angeles?
Yeah, close.
New York City?
Washington, D.C.
Oh.
The most expensive in terms of in terms of income, the income difference with like what it costs monthly to live is negative $300. So you end up $300 in the hole every month.
Wow.
If you're the average. That's not a good way to live. You can't do that.
Well, everyone living up there, it in most cases, is actually employed by the government, or they are a big media personality on one of these cable news shows. So it's understandable that they would make the prices up there pretty outrageous because they're all getting paid quite well.
Yeah, I mean, certain parts of it are pretty nice. I mean, the historical areas are really nice, really beautiful. But yeah, it's I still always remember talking to a guy that lives there, and I only saw the historic part of the city. You know, I said to him, wow, it's a really nice city here. He's like, are you serious? I was like, yeah. So he had a different experience than I did. He thought I was being sarcastic. I really liked it.
Yeah, Washington, D.C. is pretty infamous for just low-income housing, all those sorts of things, because it is it's just interesting because it's jam-packed right there on the Potomac or next to like, the Baltimore and all these other bigger cities, urban centers. So, there are some really nice parts that most of the money goes into, but then there's just some very low-income housing that has stagnated for decades there.
My biggest problem with the city is the basketball team changing their name to the Wizards.
Yeah.
It was the Bullets.
How do you get much better than the Bullets?
Yeah. And
that's really intimidating.
They didn't like it because of all the crime that was going on. And so they thought, well, we'll make a as if that had anything to do with it. and you're supposed to name teams after what the community represents, right? So maybe it was fair. But Wizards, you know, did they just pick it out of a hat? Are there a lot of wizardry in Washington, D.C.? Why are they the Wizards? I never understood that.
Yeah, they'll change the name to some pagan practicing magic. That's way better than Bullets.
Yeah. It could have called them, like, the Wiccans or something.
Maybe there's a lot of live-action role-playing going on in D.C. That's why they called it that. But, yeah, it's just, just weird because the Washington Capitals, the hockey teams, Capitals, and,
Senators.
Yeah, the Sentinels.
Nationals.
Yeah. Yeah, Nationals. Like, you have all these names that actually make sense because you're in the Capitol, but then you have the Wizards. Like, I don't know if that's a hit on what they think the government's doing or... No idea.
Yeah, it's really, really bizarre. I mean, they make like money appear out of nowhere at the Fed, right? So that's
there
like,
you go.
Maybe that's why they're the Wizards.
That's the answer.
You just can't get behind that, and you're cheering. You know, go Wizards! I don't.
Harry Potter fans, though, they would like that a lot.
Maybe so. Maybe that's why. But anyway, that's one of the things I never understood about that area. there's a new study out. The New York Times is publishing it. It says for exercise, nothing like the great outdoors. Long walks can improve moods and reduce anxiety. But the benefits may be greatest if the walks take place outdoors, they have found, rather than inside of a gym where you just walk in circles looking at the walls. It's a new study by researchers in Austria, and they say while the Alps may be a particularly fine place to hike, a vigorous walk in the woods or paths near your place, your house, may provide the mental boost that is needed to be positive and keep going. And so they took a group of people, they had them walk, tested their mood, that type of thing, and then some indoors, some outdoors to see who did better. People that walked outdoors did a little bit better. So just a nice hike is good. They say for optimal health, we need to move, and people know that. But research shows that people typically will only do what they enjoy. So if you have an exercise routine that you hate, you probably won't keep doing it unless you like harming yourself. So for a lot of people, just a nice brisk walk does wonders for your physical health and mental health.
Well, you have the sunshine, you have the fresh air, obviously the scenery, like you mentioned. And so all those things will actually help physical health a lot more as well. And we've talked about how that has a lot of relation to the mental health, the attitudes that we experience.
Yeah. I've been incorporating this into my life. I've been taking a little walk at lunchtime. Mm-hmm. It's been good. It's been good for me. It's hot out there, but you don't have to stay out too long. And we are in a good situation here at the campus of Herbert W. Armstrong College, where we're broadcasting from, where you can take a little stroll. And so that's nice. See some wildlife.
We saw each other outdoors yesterday.
Yeah.
I was sitting by the pool.
That's right. That's right. I was taking a stroll. So it's good. It's good, especially if you're sitting in front of a computer a lot, which most of us do. Any type of walking is really beneficial. They even say if you're sitting most of the day, you know, if you can take 5 minutes, an hour, and get up and just walk around, even if it's just down the hallway or something, it's much better for you just to get moving and take a break from staring at the internet.
Yeah. Well, I think it's... our lifestyles are so so much more sitting down, so much more low energy compared to what they used to be. So it's great to have a place, if there's a park nearby or something you can go to. And I mean, I think everyone just likes walking in parks, the sense of, I don't know, adventure or exploration, or especially if kids or a family. Mm-hmm. It's just a lot more enjoyable than walking in the gym or working out in the gym, like Gold's Gym or something, where you've hundreds of people just staring at you and judging you. So it's good just to get out in a good environment and just enjoy yourself.
You guys ever see those workout spots at parks where yes. they have the different contraptions and bars and things? It's like a And they have a little diagram there, sort of like, this is what you can do, basic stuff. You can do pull-ups, push-ups. There's some things that are just confusing. I don't know what you would do on them. But, yeah, people use those. I see people doing that, which is kind of neat. I think it'd be almost, I don't know, it could be a little embarrassing doing all this stuff and people are walking by looking at you. My kids love it, not for the actual exercises, but they just make games on the stuff, you know. I think you're supposed to do push-ups on it, but they use it like it's a balance beam. So right. the kids always find fun ways to not use things correctly.
Yeah. Well, actually, in Israel, there's one of those near our apartment. And I didn't always go. There was a gym I went and worked out at, but I would just go there. And this is before I was married, mind you, but I went there and I was almost finished a workout, but then a bunch of girls came and were sitting on the benches watching me. So I'm like, well, I have to step up my effort now. So I added like an extra 300 reps to my workout just because
reps?
Of that. Yeah.
What a man.
So at the
did they stay? Did they seem impressed?
Well, I think they walked away when I was busy like doing something.
He's not looking quick at those move. Yeah. That's well, there you go. I suppose that I suppose people use that type of thing for dating. You know, you go to a gym membership, that type of thing.
That does make it weird when people just stop to watch. I don't think that's what anyone is hoping for.
Yeah, I mean, either they're really impressed or they're really stunned. You know,
yeah.
But something has really piqued their interest at that point. We went for a walk the other day in one of the local parks here, and they just sprayed all the walking trails with like a new coat of asphalt or something. It was horrific. We went part way and we said, I can't do this anymore. I'm glad they do it. I mean, it's good to keep the trails nice, but you got to let it clear out because it was horrible. I was walking the whole time thinking like, am I going to die from this? What am I breathing here? So we left.
You get that sulfur smell coming off of the asphalt, and it's nauseating.
It wasn't great.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of stories in the news lately about problems with airplanes and people flying and other difficulties. Seems like it just keeps getting worse and worse. This is a bizarre story. I've never heard anything like this. Woman throws coins into plane engine for good luck, delaying the flight for 5 hours. As she was getting on the plane, she just thought, well, I'll toss some coins in there, and that will help us. No, it will not help you. It could destroy the plane and kill everyone. An elderly woman delayed a flight in China for more than 4 hours Tuesday after throwing coins into the plane's jet engine for good luck. The 80-year-old threw 9 coins into the engine's turbine and performed a blessing as she was boarding the China Southern Airlines flight at Pudong Airport, prompting passengers to alert airline staff. Thankfully somebody saw it. That lady just threw some coins in there. The flight, which was scheduled to leave the airport at 12:40 p.m., was delayed until 4:50 p.m., while staff carried out a thorough assessment of the engine turbines. She's an older lady, so maybe she doesn't fly a lot. I don't know. I just can't understand how anyone would think this was a good idea. I've never heard of anything like this before. If you were on that flight, I can imagine you'd be pretty furious.
One of many examples of why airports are becoming less than pleasant. I believe I heard David Dow, that guy who got in a fight on the United plane, got a $60 million settlement.
Oh, really?
And you could imagine being the other people on that flight where he's just causing a scene and acting like a toddler, and now he just got $60 million for it. If what I heard is true, that just should never happen. But you have unruly passengers. You have people who do things like that. Why not just throw one coin in instead of 9? There are so many ways to possibly be a bit more reasonable so that other people around you don't have to suffer.
Yeah. Throwing metal objects into the metal engine. Bizarre. So anyway, I guess I don't know if she'd get in trouble. I guess with her age, you might just say, well, she just doesn't quite know what's happening. And so I've never heard of that. This, I guess, it's the old wishing well thing, right? You throw the coins in and make a wish, and here she threw them into the
wishing turbine.
The wishing turbine. Wow-wee. Man, that's just a crazy story. We're coming up on the 4th of July here, and just as a quick reminder, fireworks accidents last year sent more than 11,000 Americans to emergency rooms, two-thirds of them in, of course, the 4th of July time period, the Consumer Product Safety Commission said. 11,000 people. You never want to buy fireworks from a place called, like, you know, Four Finger Willie's fireworks.
Oh. Remember that New York Giants football player?
Yeah.
He lost a couple fingers last year. Wasn't it last year?
Yeah, well, yeah. It was
2 years ago,
And he, his hand is partially missing.
He played with, like, a club wrapped over his hand all year, which you would think that would actually be a pretty big advantage when you're on the defensive line and you can just smash guys with that thing.
Yeah, well.
So maybe it actually worked out
for him. Well, he had a huge contract right before then. Was it Jason Pierre-Paul? Was that the guy?
I think that's who it was.
Yeah, and he had that fireworks accident, blew up in his hand, took off part of his hand, and he almost lost his contract over that. Turns out he could still play. In some cases, it might be an advantage. The disadvantage would be you can't grab. You couldn't, like get your hand on the guy and shove him. You just have to kind of club him.
Right.
So I guess you couldn't call him for holding, right? Not too many defensive holdings, but still. You know, he's like, I don't even have a hand. I couldn't hold this guy. But, yeah, you do have to be careful because, accidents do happen, 11,000 people injured.
I did want to ask a question to our listeners and to you guys, too, because I'm Canadian.
Sure.
So we have fireworks at big events, but it's nothing like the cult it is down here in the United States with 4th of July. So I was just wondering why there are so many fireworks during July 4th, because a lot of people tell me, well, it's from the National Anthem, but the National Anthem was written during the War of 1812. It has nothing to do with Independence Day. So I was just wondering, like, where did it come from, or what is it supposed to represent?
We'll research it. We'll find out. I couldn't tell you off the top of my head.
I don't really know either, but last week when I was out of town, there was a firework that went off close to 11 o'clock at night. It sounded like a bomb. It rocked the whole neighborhood. There were car alarms that were set off, and then a few minutes later, police helicopter went right over our heads. So
where was that? Out in
California, on Long Beach. Apparently, a lady called the police because she did think it was a bomb. And I was thinking about calling them too. It really did sound like something went off.
Wow. Yeah, it's amazing what some people will spend on fireworks. It really is pretty expensive. There is there's a lot of stands that come up locally here, especially in Logan County where we are. And occasionally they'll put like a flyer in your yard to advertise. And I got one yesterday. It was this blue thing. It was wrapped up, and everybody got one that's thrown by their mailbox. I didn't open it up to really see which one it was. The only thing that I saw that caught my attention was they said it was old-time prices. I've never heard that. Like when? Like 1850? Like how old are we talking?
Like 2 cents?
Do I have to? Yeah. Or do I have to pay with gold? Like, I've never heard somebody advertise something with old-time prices. What does that mean? How far back are we going?
Yeah, it's a little. It's just an obscure phrase that would confuse
the
people more than like clarify what he's actually selling or what the price is. But, in the neighborhood I live in, certain parts of it, there's a. Because some people, it seems like they don't spend a whole lot of money maybe on like lawn maintenance or other things, but when 4th of July comes, they spend hundreds of dollars on fireworks and it goes off continually all night.
Yeah,
I'm like, well, like where is that money going the rest of the year? Like
they're saving it. Yeah, I was talking to a guy that used to when he was a teenager used to work at those stands, and he said there would be the same people sometimes come back 3 or 4 times and spend $5,000 every time they showed up. Loaded up in the pickup, and so I guess I appreciate that in some ways because I get a free show if my neighbor set it off. The kids always want to get fireworks, so we usually get some, but I always tell them, like, why? Well, let's let our neighbors shoot them off. We'll just sit in the front yard and watch them. What difference does it make if they shoot it or I shoot it, you know? But
well, so. A Briton did ask me that same question as well, why we have the fireworks, and possibly a simple explanation is that America is just... We're bombastic and we do things pretty big, and it's kind of a big, gigantic show of pride that probably a lot of other nations couldn't relate to. Maybe one of those American exceptionalism type deals.
You should do some sort of Twitter poll on it, Abraham. Find out
that's good.
What people know. Give them some options. Do some research. Give them some options. You're listening to Trumpet Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG. Key of David programs coming up. Also, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Stephen Fleury from Edmond, Oklahoma today. And talked a lot about this recent story with CNN. I guess 3 CNN employees got fired, I guess, because of a story that had to be taken down, retracted. And so they're really in the news a lot. There's some great clips in the Trumpet Daily today about just one of their main producers admitting that they don't really have anything on the president, but they're just going to keep poking around and seeing if they can find something. The ratings are good. And so it's just kind of a witch hunt, and that's what the president has said, and in those sound bites you'll hear that CNN producer agreed with that. He said, yeah, it's pretty much a witch hunt. We're just looking to see what we can find. Related to that, a story from the Daily Wire. New low, it says, CNN uses Sesame Street's Elmo to attack Trump's travel ban. Because whenever there's a major issue of national security, I think we all think, what does Elmo have to say about it? Elmo was part of a panel including CNN. By the way, that's obviously it's a puppet and there's a guy involved there. I don't know who it is. But Elmo was part of a panel. This is not a joke. This is serious. Elmo was part of a panel including CNN reporter Clarissa Ward, Sherry Weston from Sesame Workshop, and David Miliband from the International Rescue Committee. And they asked Elmo this, did you find that the Syrian little girls and little boys were a lot like your friends here in America? And Elmo said, yes, they really were. It was very interesting because they like to play and learn just like Elmo and all of his friends at Sesame Street. Well, open the borders. Let everyone come. Elmo has said that. Elmo always refers to himself in the third person.
Yes.
Ever notice that?
It's a huge amount of hubris there. Yeah. Just unbelievable.
Anyone else does it, they get blasted for it, not Elmo.
Elmo's uncomfortable with this line of questioning. They write up, the Daily Wire says, at no time during the 15-minute segment did CNN or Elmo inform the public of the fact that Trump's temporary ban is meant to improve vetting procedures for refugees coming from countries designated by the Obama administration as especially risky when it comes to seating refugees with terrorists. In other words, the pause is meant to keep American children safe from the Islamic threats that had become part of daily life in Europe. At no time did CNN or Elmo inform the public that many of the people from that part of the world would prefer to stay in that part of the world and would prefer America's refugee plan to stabilize their region and create safe zones. So the whole thing's pretty ridiculous, but I mean, are they going to bring Elmo on and ask him about the latest suicide bombing that goes off? Explain to the kids, Elmo, about the suicide bombing.
Well, yeah, it's just ridiculous to use a children's icon or character to try to press a certain political point of view. I think it's just a kind of a ridiculous spectacle, not going through what the travel ban is actually about. That's actually about improving security, improving the chances for the non-terrorist migrants to make it to America and have a chance. And I think it's it could do a lot of good. And just to use something like this, this kind of makes a mockery out of the whole issue, because it is a very important issue. And to use a character from a cartoon or from a children's show is kind of takes away the seriousness of it.
Oh, absolutely. And just the response that, yeah, they like to play and learn. Well, all kids do. It's nothing to do with this situation. It kind of reminds me actually of what you see over with the Palestinians, right? Where they all have cartoons and kid shows that teach the kids to hate the Jews. This is sort of similar in a sense. I mean, they're pushing a political ideology on children with a puppet. And when I was growing up, I guess I watched some Sesame Street, and I think typically they talked about a few Spanish words, reading, a few other things. I don't remember it ever being political in any sense. Maybe I just didn't get it. And we're talking early 80s here. So, but it's definitely changed and become much more political here lately. And they take these puppets and teach the kids all kinds of things. And this is just another weird, weird example of that.
They should have asked Elmo what he thought about those activist judges pretending like they have more power than the president to even block the temporary ban in the first place.
Right.
They don't really cover the whole issue here with Elmo. I was hoping to hear more about what his thoughts are on these different subjects.
I'd love to have Elmo on and then have Oscar the Grouch debate him.
Yeah,
go back and forth.
Now you know Oscar the Grouch would agree with what we're saying. That's how they would paint it.
I always kind of liked Oscar because yeah. he was a little more of a realist.
Exactly.
You know, a little negative, but even a little more of a realist.
Yeah. Well, why do you think he's a Grouch? They make him live in a garbage can. Like anyone would be in a foul mood if they were forced to live in that. But yeah. I think Megyn Kelly should interview Elmo for her next big story. See, get the big scoop on the world events. I don't know.
Could be. Yeah. So anyway, just bizarre that they would bring that out. That's from the Daily Wire. And of course, there's a lot more about that CNN situation on the Trump and Daily Radio show today. And it, like Stephen Fleury points out, it's serious. Just from the standpoint of it's so dangerous to the country to be just pushing lies. When there's actually bigger issues to cover, much bigger issues to cover. So check that out today on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you can't catch it live or a replay, archives at thetrumpet and kpcg.fm. You can also check out thetrumpet.com today. Top story, conservatives are no longer even pretending that they dislike debt. It's by Kieran Underwood. The British are thinking surplus, but instead they are just getting more debt. Also related to that, a building storm of debt and an awesome secret about America's national debt. And also, of course, the Trumpet Hour program today as well here on KPCG. And those are the headlines of thetrumpet.com. Grant, you've got a write-up here for us related to the travel ban, but it's California's travel bans from the Federalist. California's travel ban messes with Texas. You don't mess with Texas.
Apparently, they haven't learned that our neighbors to the south are above being messed with. They do not take that well, and they will not respond to it well.
What's the expression? You mess with the bull, you get the horns?
Exactly.
That's what's going to happen.
Yeah, they are picking a fight with the wrong state, especially considering that so many businesses are actually fleeing California to go to Texas. A lot of people can see that regulations and taxes are not pleasant for people trying to run a business. But this travel ban specifically is about a law that was passed last year where the attorney general of the state can ban state-funded travel to any state that attorney general deems discriminatory. So it doesn't matter if the state is discriminatory or not. It's just whatever that one man thinks.
So he's banning state-funded travel. So in other words, if somebody was going to go on there on a business trip and it would be paid for typically by the state? Like, is that how that works?
Basically, it's restricting government employees for the most part. And I'm not really sure. I think a lot of colleges are subsidized by the government. And so if they were going on intercollegiate trips for sports, probably a lot of that would be restricted as well.
Oh, that's interesting, because obviously you'd have some major collegiate matchups between those two states. Yeah, that would be really interesting.
Yeah, and so the reason this is coming back, this law from a year ago is coming back into the news, is that last week they actually added four more states to this list of discriminatory states that are part of the travel ban. Alabama, Kentucky, South Dakota, and Texas have joined Kansas, Mississippi, North Carolina, and Tennessee. So now there are eight states on this travel ban list. I'm actually shocked Oklahoma isn't on it when every county voted for Mr. Trump, and that's one of only two states in the country that way. Really, that's what's behind the whole entire travel ban. That's what the article brings out. It's about the left trying to take its culture war into these red states.
So do they have an exact reason? Like, do they say, okay, we ban you from going to Texas because they did this particular thing?
They do actually have specifics, which is nice, but it's easy to debunk what their specifics are. This law started with North Carolina's bathroom bill last year. So that's obviously why North Carolina is on the list. I believe Texas had it, was on there because of, let's find what that was. They had another law about religious freedom. Indiana had a law like that that spurred a lot of these issues as well.
So basically a state that makes a law that this particular judge would say, hey, that's discriminatory in my viewpoint, from my viewpoint, I'm going to put them on the list. So they're kind of trying to penalize these other states according to their ideology. And it could affect some people, I guess, but it seems also just like a lot of big talk as well. Like, I mean, it's not going to stop anybody, I wouldn't think, but
in practice, it's actually hard to carry it out, but they are talking big and trying to force their ideals on other parts of the country. Specifically with Texas, they had a law where different child care or adoption centers could choose, based on religious beliefs, not to allow a homosexual couple to adopt a child if they didn't think that that would be ideal for children, and stats do bear that out. And there were a couple other states that did the same thing. So laws like that would protect maybe a business from government discrimination based on religious beliefs, all of those different states are being added to the list. That's not a matter of people trying to use religion to persecute others. It's just trying to protect those beliefs from being impinged upon by other groups.
Well, couldn't another judge in another state just shoot down the travel ban? It seems to be what they do, right? So you could just get a judge from Texas that says, nah, I don't agree with it, and then shoot the whole thing down?
Yeah, you would think. South Dakota and Alabama have done similar things to what Texas has done. These are obviously states that are very conservative, in stark contrast to California, although when you look on a California map where it divides it up by county, it's a thin strip of blue along the coast, and the whole rest of the state basically is red. So this is not speaking for a lot of people in the state. It's speaking for people who are what they call coastal elites, people who are very wealthy and detached from the reality of what most of the rest of the country is living in.
Yeah, I think that's probably one of the big things that the election showed, the recent presidential election, is that even though the loudest voices and the media and so forth are very, very liberal, a lot of people are not. They are, at least they'd be more conservative. I don't know how conservative people would be, but more conservative than say what you hear coming out of the media. And if you were to just believe the CNNs of the world, you'd think, boy, you know, everybody's on board with their agenda, but a lot of people are not. And that's, of course, you see that also in the popularity of like conservative news sites. I guess you'd consider Drudge, right, to be a conservative news site. He gets more views almost than anybody, I think. Fox News, I think, is doing better. I saw a headline yesterday that I think Hannity's winning now. You know, like for a while, CNN was doing better. Maybe they still are, and MSNBC. But over the past few years, Fox has been very popular. And so even though you would think, just based upon a lot of the media, that all these liberal ideals and these thoughts coming out of some parts of California is what the nation agrees with. It really isn't. At least half don't agree with it.
A whole lot of people who are not as loud and boisterous about these subjects actually don't agree with what is going on. And really what this is all about is a vicious attack on religion, because there are a lot of different cases where we've seen businesses destroyed by government intervention on behalf of a homosexual couple who wants a wedding cake. For example, a man who ran a bakery in Colorado was actually ordered to create cakes that celebrate same-sex weddings. He was also told to re-educate his staff and file quarterly compliance reports for 2 years. So that's a case that's now going before the Supreme Right. Court, because that's just a gigantic violation of religious freedom.
Yeah. Well, you can only ban so many states, I guess, until you've banned them all. And then it'd be California against the rest of the U.S.
Well, it's to me, it's just an odd thing to do, because a state is its own little sovereign territory, but it doesn't have the right to impose anything on any other state. That's the federal government's job. And so for a state to arrogantly think they can force other states to have the same legislation that they do, when the voters in those states voted for the legislators that are putting in those laws, it's a completely pure democratic process. And so for an attorney general in California to try to basically hijack democracy by forcing these states to change because of the travel ban, which probably no one really cares about anyway, to me, it's just, I don't know, this lunacy, and it's undemocratic. And especially when we're talking about these big issues, it's just a lot of the country, like you mentioned, is they might be fine with certain groups having rights, but they don't want their rights impinged either. They want the right to have free religion, have religious worship. That's what America was based upon, and so at its founding. And so it's just, I don't know, just a weird mix of the breakdown of the democratic process, but also these progressives want state rights for homosexuals, LGBT, whatever, but then they're willing to violate state rights for these other people. So it's just a complete violation of all these democratic principles.
Another example of what they want preceding the Constitution or any other structures we have in place in this country. It doesn't really matter what the law is. It matters what their agenda is and what they want to force on others.
Yeah, and that's always the interesting thing about it, is if a group is willing to try to and think they have the right to enforce their thinking on everybody else, what happens when that boomerangs? And all the conservative states say, you know what, actually, we're going to enforce our view on you. That nobody would like that. So can't have it both ways. To use the bakery thing, you know, you can't have your cake and eat it too. They've got to bring that up in the Supreme Court ruling. That has to come up somehow, that phrase.
I really hope so.
I don't. Can you send suggestions to the Supreme Court, like email? I'm not sure. Abraham, you've got a write-up for us here from Newsweek. This is a space-related one, the universe. A supermassive black hole merging orbits for the first time. Well, I guess the first time we would know about it, right?
Yes.
It's hard to say the first time when it comes to anything out there in space. But so black holes are really intriguing. They're fascinating. They're terrifying. And so now these are just black holes. They're supermassive ones. And they're merging orbits. So maybe you can explain that process.
Sure. So these two black holes, supermassive, their density, they think, are about 15 billion times more dense than the sun. So that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. There's a huge amount of density in them. And
if I understand them correctly, they basically suck things into a
yes.
black hole. They have such a gravitational pull, and if you were to find yourself in that position, you'd be obliterated.
Yeah. So if they have their matter is so densely packed together that they have supergravity, because the molecules are just slammed together in so little space that it just creates a huge amount of mass, even though the actual object isn't that big, if that makes sense. So these two supermassive black holes are 750 million light years away from one another. And in space terms, they're very close to each other.
Right.
And they're this is the first time they've observed black holes actually moving in relation to each other. They're not moving on their own path. They're actually circulating around each other. And it's very slow, though. Each orbit takes about 20,000 to 30,000 years. So it's hard for us to observe it because we've had a very small window to do so. But they can, they've been able to track it and realize there's a relation between the two black holes. And they're excited about it in a sense because scientists don't know why galaxies are created. Why are there a bunch of stars and planets and matter all concentrated in one place? They think that black holes are at the center of each solar system, each galaxy. Hmm. Not solar system, but just a galaxy, and that's what kind of holds everything together. And so they're thinking that these black holes, it's a phenomenon like this that create the movement of galaxies. So when you see these galaxies moving throughout space, it's because these supermassive black holes are all interacting with each other, pulling each other together, that sort of thing. And so these two black holes, at some point they're going to run into each other. And when supermassive black holes run into each other, they create these huge shock waves that go, they say they can even rip the space-time continuum. I don't know if that's true, but...
Now, but they're saying, to their knowledge or in our experience, we haven't seen it happen before.
Correct.
But just based upon what they know, that's what they're projecting. This is what would happen. Okay.
Yeah, just based off of what they can track with gravity wave, because gravitational waves take so long to travel through space, then in a sense, the waves reaching Earth now are ancient. So in a sense, we can look back in time and see what was happening. So it's all a theory. It's not
right.
Grounded in anything we know 100%. But it is interesting that this type of thing might help us understand why the universe is structured the way it is that these black holes, they do suck things in, but they actually keep the universe in a certain structure. They're like the anchors, gravitational anchors of the universe that keep everything in a certain structure, keep things moving in a certain direction. And so this is the first time they've observed two ones orbiting each other. And so it'll be interesting where it goes, and we won't be around when they collide with each other. But
Hey, if you're going to get into the business of space science, it's always good to talk about things that are going to happen long after you're dead.
Yeah.
Because who's going to be there to say you were wrong? You can write your paper and people are like, yeah, maybe. We'll see what happens.
Well, that's actually the smart thing about hitching your wagon to the climate change debate, because obviously all the results of that are going to be hundreds of years from now. So you could be as strong as you want on either side of that debate, and no one's really going to be able to tell you that you're wrong because you'll be dead by the time that it plays out.
Well, that's the same thing with the evolutionary debate, from at least what I was taught in college. Because the question always comes up, well, okay, how come we don't see these half species running around? And now some people say, oh, you do, but, you know, I don't think anyone believes that. have you been downtown? No, I'm just kidding. but what they would say is, look, it happens over such a long period of time, you don't notice it. You know, that was kind of the thing. So when you stretch things out into a really long period of time, then, yeah, you could say a lot of things, and who can really pin it down? So that's how at least how it was presented to me, because students would ask those questions. They're just common sense questions. Well, how come we don't see this, this, and this? And, well, it takes such a long time, you don't notice it. Well, it's a convenient thing to say, but, again, there's no proof to that.
You think they would have found a link in the chain in terms of a fossil or anything, but every single one of those has been proven to be fabricated.
Yeah. So it's really interesting. And, of course, when you look out into the universe, it's interesting to see what's going on out there with the black holes. And that's interesting. I knew of them. I didn't know that they were, I guess, considered like the pillars of the structure out there.
Yeah, they could be.
It's a thought anyway.
Yeah, and it's because they're... we usually think of them as like terrifying things that destroy everything, but there has to be some kind of practical purpose for them. And so they could actually be just like heavy anchors that kind of everything moves around.
Yeah. Well, that's fascinating. Yeah. Really interesting story there from Newsweek. They're taking a look at some of that supermassive black hole merging orbits for the first time that they know of. Check back in 20 billion years. You've got another write-up here from the Daily Mail. It says, Pride of Britain, question? No. HMS Queen Elizabeth is a 6 billion pound, that's money, blunder, probably weighs that much too, that should be scuttled, writes Max Hastings. That's scathing.
Yeah, it's Max Hastings is a pretty renowned historian, and he used to be a newspaper editor. And so his opinions don't go by without people noticing. And so he thinks that the new aircraft carrier that Britain just finished building went to sea for the first time yesterday, for his first sea trials, and from Firth of Forth in Scotland. He thinks they should be scuttled. And so it's an interesting piece, and he brings up his main point is that Britain spent $6 billion on these aircraft carriers. There's two. The second one is being built, the Prince of Wales. Spent 6 billion pounds. And then, but the Royal Navy does not even, barely have the ships to protect them. So, in other words, if one of these aircraft carriers were deployed, the Royal Navy only has 19 ships of any noticeable size. So almost all those ships would be needed just to protect one of these in a flotilla. Furthermore, these ships were specifically designed for the F-35. They wanted more than 20 on them, but the F-35s are becoming so expensive that they cut that down to 12, which is a very small amount of planes for aircraft carrier to be effective. So essentially, these aircraft carriers had high aspirations, but everything has become so expensive that the British government doesn't have the money to put planes on them. They don't. The army and the air force is so small that these aircraft carriers are kind of irrelevant to the rest of the British armed forces. So he said it was a huge blunder for Britain to even build them. What that six billion pounds could have gone to more effective, more important parts of the armed forces.
So, do you know what the thinking was in building them? Why did obviously they would know all these details that he's bringing out, and more so. So why would they go ahead and invest so much money into them if they're not all that effective?
Well, there's a few different reasons why. These were actually built by the Labour government. They're the ones who put them into action. The Prime Minister Gordon Brown is Scottish, and so any big project like this brings a lot of jobs to Scottish shipping yards that build the ships for the Royal Navy. So he thinks that was one part of it, was just, it was like a job program for the Scott,
right,
for the building yards, because they were going out of business. Also, it is, having aircraft carriers are a very good thing. And if you want to be relevant in the world, you do need aircraft carriers, essentially. The problem is, there are far too big, and almost all the previous governments in the UK sold off their aircraft carriers, or they scrapped them when they were perfectly fine. And so Max Hastings just says, like, well, it's probably going to happen to these two because we just, with the welfare state in the UK, they don't have enough money to maintain them. Doesn't matter how big the aircraft carrier is. And so he says that's the trend that's kind of eating up the armed forces, is that each government is willing to build them because it looks good in the public eye, but they just sell them off because they know they can't afford them.
Yeah.
So it's kind of just a publicity stunt for the government to make them look like they're trying to build a bigger British power, when in the background they're cutting the Royal Navy's budget, they're cutting off all the important ships that would protect the aircraft carriers. They're cutting or spending money on the wrong fighter jets, or they're cutting down the armed forces to where even if the Queen Elizabeth could be deployed, there aren't really enough soldiers that even fight the war they would be going to. So it's a weird relationship that the UK has with the armed forces, that the government always wants to build these big ships, and they do, but they end up scrapping them or selling them off before they even make back their money in look value.
So basically it is just a massive waste of money. And apparently, whether you're talking about Navy or air power or land power, Britain can't really do it alone anymore. They're not necessarily independent, so they would have to have a coalition. They'd have to get in with some other nations for the most part if they wanted to go into a war away from home.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, it seems like they seem very conflicted as a people. You know, on one hand, they want to be a global power, which they're not anymore. Then on the other hand, they're ashamed on some level of their power of the past. And then they want to, some people want to just let everybody in and be this welfare state. But then at the same time, they don't want to be part of the EU. It's just a very conflicted group of people, it seems like. And they're kind of still living or driving on the fumes of the past glory, even though they're ashamed of it in a lot of ways. Like, they still think, even in, say you have a terrorist attack, and what do you hear a lot of? Like, well, World War II, and we didn't follow the Nazis, we won't follow the EU. And they kind of are using that past glory to kind of bolster their self-esteem. But then at the same time, they reject that history in a lot of ways, but then build military ships that they can't really use, it aren't strong enough to go out and fight on their own, like you said, Grant. But then also want to be a welfare state. I mean, it's just like a very conflicted group of people there without like a clear singular focus of any kind.
Yeah, it's any UK government, even Margaret Thatcher's, which was probably the last good one that they had, is very conflicted, very short-sighted objectives, because it's mainly the British public's fault, because if the government doesn't deliver what they want, they'll vote them out and get someone else in. And that's basically been the story since the end of World War II, when they kicked Churchill out, is they didn't want Churchill's long-term vision of building a new world order, which the UK would have to sacrifice something for. Instead, they wanted food stamps. They wanted a welfare system to take care of them, because the British people did have a rough time in the war, and they felt like they were entitled to having something from it. But it's that attitude that it has been their undoing, because they do have a proud history. In fact, that history holds a lot of inspiration and holds the key to their greatness. But they want to be great without the obligation of their past. And they want to be a great military power where they can act independent of the EU and the United States, but they don't want to pay for it. Because...
And can't.
Yeah, exactly. In order to restore their military, it would take so long and so much money that they would have to bankrupt every other budget. So, I mean, they're already past the point of no return. Armed forces are completely destroyed because of basically taking socialism over national security. And so they can't even... the last time they could deploy on their own was the Falklands 35 years ago this year. But even then, they barely could do it. They were sending their two aircraft carriers to the scrapyards, what they were selling one to, and they had to save them from the brink. And then they didn't even have ships to send their soldiers over in. They had to commandeer two huge cruise liners just to be able to send the soldiers over, because wow, they didn't have enough ships for them. So they barely did it 35 years ago. So today they wouldn't have a chance.
Yeah. Well, and it's amazing too, because this idea of say building up your military to go out and defend your country, and you're getting blasted in London right now.
Yeah.
With terrorism. You know, if they spend £6 billion on these, I mean, how much is spent on counterterrorism and actually stopping it in some fashion? You know, you can't even defend your own tourist attractions, let alone protecting your nation from some sort of, you know, massive war.
It's pretty obvious that the people have chosen comfort over anything that resembles sacrifice. But the strange thing about that is they're pretty soon going to be forced to sacrifice against their will, because they have chosen comfort for so long.
Well, that's right. That's the way history always goes, right? I mean, if you're not willing to stand up and fight for something, then you just surrender, ultimately.
Yeah. Well, it's the article I wrote for The Trumpet that was released earlier this week, Churchill and Defeating Terrorism.
We mentioned it in your absence.
It's fantastic, yeah, too.
But that's what it's about, just that the UK can't simply wish away terrorism, and they're actually making the same mistakes they made. They even brought about the Blitz and threat of invasion. If they acted stronger earlier, disaster would have been avoided in the first place. And so they're missing that foresight today, and they don't have a strong leader who's willing to make the hard decisions for them. And so they're just blundering towards a situation to where I saw on Twitter one guy was complaining, the UK police force, they spend a lot of money on these LGBT pride cars with like rainbows on them and stuff.
Right.
But they, just before, they're complaining about how their budget's being cut, and they have to cut back on police officers because they don't have enough money. But they'll spend money on the pride cars, but they won't spend it on people's actual safety. Does that, that's a kind of a microcosm of the UK. They spend money on looking good, looking this progressive socialist part, but when it comes to actually power, that their enemies respect, they're completely void of it.
And that's really ties into the Trump Daily Radio Show as well, where it's brought out that, you know, the media has a big part in that, had a big part in World War II and not preparing the British people when Churchill was warning. And then, of course, we see those same issues today, and probably a lot worse there as well. So that's all the time we have for this edition of Trumpet Radio Live. Make sure you listen for the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, Key David program, and the Trumpet Hour program today as well. For myself, Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon, Abraham Blondeau, have a great rest of your Wednesday. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.